The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by the Ignition Switch. It's Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. What's up, man?
The Ignition Switch.
Yeah, you came in today. You came in 3 hours earlier than I thought, and I just was jacked from the minute you got in here for the next 3 hours. It's just got me jacked up all the way to doing this.
You're so energized right now.
I mean, I can't even. I'm bubbling right now. I'm bubbling over with excitement, not only because of you, because we have Jesse Lang of Rudis coming on later. So there's just a lot of positives going on. Thanks for the Ignition, man.
It's always good when your energy level is high.
It is.
Keep your strength and focus along with it. You're good to go.
It is. And part of the reason is because I think I'm as engaged in wrestling as I ever have been, thanks to technology. And I think of what's going on with the Cadet World Championships right now. Junior World's coming later, the Senior Worlds, which I was always checked into, but I think with the system we have now, not only are we checked into the worlds, but we're checked into the process to get to those tournaments. And I think it's really exciting to know the journey and how a wrestler gets there, and you're following it, you're covering it. These are exciting times.
Awesome. Like, you think about this, we've been talking with some people at Track Wrestling involved with what we're doing on the UWW front, and some other people that cover international wrestling extensively too. And we're talking about it, like, last year, I bet we had Gino Petrushvili, heavyweight world champ from Georgia. I bet we streamed 15 to 20 of his matches in 2017 alone, because he wrestled in Senior Worlds, U23 Worlds, European Championships at the senior level, and then U23 Euros. And you think about the guys that we grew up watching, and there'd be some that you'd get to see them once every 4 years, maybe. You get to see one match every 4 years. And now, shoot, we get to see some of these guys now when they're 15, 16 years old and get to follow their careers. I was looking at some of the medalists here as we got prepared for the Cadet World Championships. And some of the guys that are having top flight success now, where they were when they were at the cadet level. It's pretty fascinating to see guys that have been winners all along. Yazdani Chirati, Sadjalayev, and then some other guys that have really made level jumps. Petrushvili, for example, was in the World Finals, Cadet World Finals, lost to Adam Kuhn, got pinned by Adam Kuhn in 2011, and now... Yeah. 6 years later, he's a senior level world champ. And so it's going to be fun to go back even 5 years from now and watch the guys that are stars in 5 years, or the guys that are wrestling now at the cadet level and junior level. What do they become 5 years from now, and go back and watch their matches and how their skills evolve over time?
And we've talked about that extensively, about how far it's come just from the technology point of view. Even just taking Jordan Burroughs and going back to his first year when he competed, I went through and watched some of those matches that the openmat.com had put out, just talking about Jordan Burroughs' best matches. And there was his quarterfinal match against the Russian, and it was Gary Abbott doing commentary. It wasn't live. Yeah. It was just, that's where you got the match. And here we are, 2018, and where we can watch the Cadet Worlds. We can watch everything streamed online. And I watched every single match on Track Wrestling last year from the World Championships. Now we have that. You would think 2011 we would have that capability, but it's taken that that short of a period, and now we have this unprecedented access to go from Gary Abbott with a camera, and
probably in the stands too.
He was in the stands, yeah. And you know, I love it that he has. We have that footage. Don't get me wrong. We love Gary and what he does, but man, it's just amazing how far we've come, and to know that we don't have to watch that in hindsight. We would just probably get that, what, 24 hours later when he posted it on USA Wrestling.
Yeah.
Now we just get things live time. So pretty special that we get that opportunity just at all levels. especially at even the qualification tournaments. Like I said, I think more people are checked in more often than they ever have been.
Yeah, and you think about people pushing the envelope on technology too. Think about the advancements that are going to come. And we'll look back down the road in a few years at this show and probably be amazed at some of the things that are happening in our space then.
What do you think they are? Do you have ideas on what they could be, or do you have possibilities?
I don't know. I just think that its production level is capable of doing so much more. I mean, right now we're seeing one camera on every mat for the Cadet World Championships, all the age group World Championships. But I think there are a lot more things that can be done, just jazzing things up a little bit.
So we talk about advancements. Here we are in July now, and if we were in this point 5 years ago, we would have been worrying about, do we still have a sport at the Olympic Games? 2013 was that year where the IOC decided to potentially eliminate, or there was a recommendation that wrestling was dropped from the Olympic program. Here we are 5 years later talking about where we are as a sport. Let's just have a conversation about what that looks like. We talk about the advancements. How much of what we're talking about has been predicated on that decision that we could potentially have been removed? Rich Bender at USA Wrestling said it was the most important moment in our sport's history, which I happen to agree with. Are we doing the right things now? Have we gotten complacent, or are we doing the right things to make sure that we never let that happen again?
I think we're doing a lot of good things. I think we're advancing the sport in terms of visibility across the world. I think the sport is, you know, we've talked about this in past episodes too. The sport's in a good place from an action and entertainment standpoint. It's night and day better than what it was pre-February 12th, 2013. The stuff that the UWW crew is doing on the video front, cutting up highlights, splashy stuff there, Big Move Monday, stuff like that has been incredibly positive. And like we said, you know, we've been able to develop international stars more. I mean, a guy like Sagulayev, just because of what he does at age 18 and 19 and bursts onto the scene, winning senior level world titles right out of the gate. Kyle Snyder, you know, that rivalry has been tremendous for the sport. You know, will that go on for years to come? We'll see. We'll see whether it goes down again in Budapest. But things like that, young superstars have been great for the sport. I think the rule set is great. I think what we're doing from a promotional standpoint is really good too. I think one of the keys though is continuing to push the envelope and not get satisfied with where we're at right now as a sport and continually look to evolve and improve.
Do you think we've let down a little bit, though, from that moment? Because I don't think we probably bring it up as much. It's just like anything 5 years removed. I don't know that we necessarily need to have it in our consciousness. But, hey, we have done those improvements. It's not the same sport. We have advanced and grown and learned from that. And a lot of that comes from leadership. I think Lalovic is the right person for right now, and I think he's doing a fantastic job. But as we move forward and we continue to think about that leadership, how do we make sure we maintain that so that we don't get complacent? You mentioned a lot of good things, but are we ever going to get to the point where we can be a mainstream sport, or do we just have to resign ourselves that we're a niche sport and do the best we can within those parameters?
Well, I think if we resign ourselves to the fact that we're a niche sport, I think that's where you stay forever. If you don't continue to try to reach the mainstream, I think you're stuck in a place where you're just another sport, where you're ceiling is kind of capped. But I do think that there have been a lot of positives that have taken place. I mean, you talk about Nenad Lalovic and what he's done for the sport. I think the fact that he's on the IOC executive board is a tremendous, tremendous thing for wrestling. I think we were kind of checked out with maybe a little bit, I don't know if arrogance is the right word, if cocky is the right word, if we took things for granted as a sport without leveraging those relationships with the key decision makers on the IOC. And that's how we wound up in a mess in 2013. But fortunately, things have turned around. I think that as painful as that moment was in retrospect, it wound up being a huge positive for wrestling, and that big time wake up call, and forced us as a sport to make a lot of changes that were necessary. And we could go on for hours about all of the things that have improved since then and all the things that needed to be cleaned up. But it's night and day in terms of entertainment.
Do you remember where you were when that decision got made, or when they decided to potentially drop it? Do you remember where you were on both ends, where they said we're going to drop it and where they said we're going to put it back in the Olympic program?
Yeah, I was at my house in Pleasant Hill, Iowa, just outside Des Moines. And that was the day of the state duels in 2013. And I had worked until like 3:34 in the morning, getting all of our state preview coverage done for the traditional state tournament, which was scheduled to start on Thursday. And so I was running on about an hour of sleep, and I rolled over and somebody had sent me a text, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then I remember I was out at Iowa Speedway covering a NASCAR truck. It might have been a Camping World Truck Series race or Xfinity Series race on the Sunday. I think it was Xfinity Series race on the Sunday when it got reinstated.
It's a great moment.
Yeah.
it was euphoric. It really did. It felt like we were all together at the same time. I had the same feeling when Kyle Snyder got that takedown at the World Championships and the United States won. It just felt like everyone had to have known about this. When I went to the grocery store, it was just a pure elation, and you thought everyone should know about this moment. And I think when you say, hey, what's our ceiling? I think the more we get people checked into that, more checked into the World Championships and feel that way about our sport, the better we're going to be. It unifies it, and it makes us feel like we are the family that can work together.
Yeah, but I think the other thing too is, like I said, continue to put the foot on the pedal, because look at Final X. It drew, 6,600 people in 3 sites. We got to continue to move that number upward. And that's a challenge. Wrestling people love what's going on right now in wrestling in terms of the international styles. But how do we go out and bring in the people that are on the periphery, that are sports fans that might not be wrestling fans, or that are going to the NCAA championships, because we're putting 20,000 people in the seats every session out in Cleveland, and yet 3 sessions with a higher level of competitors is bringing in a third of that. So what do we have to do to change that?
Yeah, I think everything's part of that. And I think so much of it is, it keeps going back and we're repeating ourselves. But I think it's worth mentioning, because we have to repeat it, is there's not a defined season. I think that's so much a part of what we do. And you don't get to see your international superstars as often. Hey, and I'd love to see some of these international guys more often. The World Cup was a great event, but hey, I would love to see Yazdani Chirati. I'd love to see Sadulayev one more time. I've never got to see him wrestle live, and I would love to have that opportunity. I don't know if it's different. You have gotten a chance to see those guys live. I'm assuming that's pretty thrilling to be part of that.
Yeah, we talk about baseball on here from time to time, and the analogy that I would draw is you go to a major league game and you watch it on TV, and you see these guys throwing 95-mile-per-hour fastballs and 90-mile-per-hour sliders, and guys throwing rockets from the outfield, and you see how hard those line drives are, and you gain a total different appreciation for how hard that game is when you're there in person watching some of the athletic feats that these guys are accomplishing. And I would say that when I walked out of Vegas at the 2015 World Championships, I felt the same way. That was one of the analogies that I drew, was it's like going and watching Major League Baseball, and you realize up close and in person how big these guys are, how fast they are, how strong they are, how crisp and clean their technique is. And some of that stuff you just can't quite fully grasp from sitting at home watching it on a computer or on a television set.
I think you're completely right about that. Even at the college level too, you have to kind of experience it in a completely unique way, where you see these guys in their environment. And you're right, even just going to football or basketball, when you see it live, when you see 300-pound linebackers coming at the quarterback, it's real in that moment. And to see that, it's hard to describe. And it's just like the armchair quarterback. You see a picture on the screen of what's happening, but until you get the full picture and your surroundings, it just doesn't become real.
Yeah, I can even think of covering Big Ten football, covering the Hawkeyes and stuff, going to the point that you're making here. You watch it from up in the press box. Then we would watch the first 3.5 quarters up in the press box. Then we go down on the sidelines for about the last 5 to 10 minutes. And you're standing there right on the sideline next to the team. And there'll be passes that come flying your way. And man, it blows your mind how much different the game is down there on the field versus even up in the press box. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Budapest. I think you are too.
I am.
And, be a lot of fun being over there up close and in person and seeing that go down at the World Championships this year.
As we get a chance to talk to Jesse Lang later on this show, I think one of the good things they're doing as we talk about engaging the sport is they're really putting our legends out there for people to see, whether it's a t-shirt or having interviews. I've seen some with Lincoln McIlravey. I just think it's good to get the narrative out there so that because we're a social media world, you get those sound bites, you get those t-shirts, more people will be aware of who they are because they're exposed. And I think that's just a great line of thinking. And I think we're just on the beginning ends of seeing how that's going to translate. But I think those 10, 15-year-olds who are wearing a Dave Schultz shirt, that's just going to transcend our sport and make us stronger because of that.
Yeah, they got a lot of cool stuff. You know, Dave Schultz, Kerry Colott, Kenny Monday, Brandon Slay, Lincoln McIlravey, Bill Zadick, you mentioned Colott, Stephen Neal, Steiner Brothers, just, yeah, lots of really cool stuff that they've got going on. And I like that Legend series. It's really cool.
And I think when you talk about Kerry Colott, you talk about Wrestling Live. There's a guy that was known for his trick knee. Until you see that, seeing it live, it's pretty incredible to see how he's able to wrestle out of situations. And there's a guy that when he got on the international stage, he lit up and he loved wrestling freestyle. But that's another example of when you see those guys wrestle live internationally. And I think we saw that when we saw the World Cup, is that this really is a different level. He talked about the 2015 World Championships. Jim Gibbons said that. He said, you know what, the NCAA guys are good, but this is just another level even higher than what we've seen. And the athleticism is just a couple notches higher. To experience that live is really something we need to capitalize on more. And I think there's some efforts with Wayne Boyd trying to do that in Cedar Rapids and see how that goes. I know there's been some professional wrestling leagues in the past that haven't really been a success. But between now and the World Championships, when are you going to get to see Jordan Burroughs wrestle, other than maybe an international tournament? I'd love to see him on U.S. soil again. How do we make that happen so that he's incentivized, so that there's always that risk of injury, but how do we make sure we see those guys more often? Because it's a black hole right now until we get to see him again.
Yeah, got to figure out a way that people can monetize the sport, that make it where it's sustainable.
Do you think a pro wrestling league can work, though? Do you think it has potential, or do you think
we're in a different place than what we were years ago? And we've talked about that even about in recent shows about how like a guy like Ironside comes out as a 4-time All-American, 2-time national champion, Hodge Trophy winner, and he's having to load or unload boxes at a UPS store midnight till 8 a.m. right before he goes in for morning workout just to be able to you know, keep training. We're not seeing that anymore. I don't think a lot more endorsement deals. Guys are figuring out ways to fuel their training without having to work a full-time job or without having to be a full-time coach. So I think that we're kind of cracking through some maybe mainstream sponsorship barriers a little bit. And I think that that's hugely positive. We're going to have to figure out just what this season looks like. And is it meant for arenas and things like that? Or is it just meant for the live stream audience? You know, does it go in a go down in a wrestling room and get streamed worldwide? And that's the way that we make it work. I think there are just so many parts, so many pieces of the puzzle that are really fascinating to me. And as you mentioned, nobody's been able to make it sustainable yet. The big thing is finding the right time on the calendar to attract the biggest stars, high profile matchups, putting it in, if we're going to put it in arenas, putting it in the right venues, because I think you got to gain some, serious momentum with the first one or two of these things to really get it rolling.
I laugh at your example with Mark Ironside, because Tolly Thompson, who was on the international scene for years, made a world team in 2005 and 2006. He was at the world team trials when it was in Ames, I think in 05, but he was taking a call right before he had to wrestle, and he owns rental properties, and he had one of his tenants on the phone just having a question, and he said, "Hey, I gotta go wrestle right now. I can't be dealing with this." So to your point, and then, hey, even just we're blocks away from Young Arena in 97, I think he wrestled an international duel, and he was kind of gassed at the end of it. He beat Shamillin at the end, but he said, yeah, he was at his mom's house eating pizza, and he ate too much. And it's just those stories where, hey, it doesn't feel elite sometimes, and it doesn't feel like, hey, we're at that level where these guys are professional athletes at that time. What you're saying is, I think we're getting more to that point. They can be subsidized, but I think a lot of these guys are just worried about if they can get health insurance, and just things you don't think about. That once you're on the ladder, you make a little bit of money from the Olympic Training Center. But outside of that, if you're not on the top three, it's not as lucrative.
Got to be in the right situation, right? You got to be not just on the national team, but also be somebody that's a desired commodity for a regional training center.
And how do you keep a guy like Kyven Gadsen going for not only this cycle, but maybe another one? Right now he's behind Kyle Snyder, but you want him in there. You want a competitive United States. And how do you make sure the number two guy feels like they can be part of this and not feel like it's a waste of their time? Because if you're number two guy in any other sport, you're called a superstar. Plain and simple. If you're number two guard or the number two second baseman, you're going to the All-Star game.
Well, I think we're in a better position. And we mentioned the Ironside example, the Tolly Thompson example, but we're in a better spot now that we saw about 10 years ago, so many people fleeing wrestling for the octagon.
Yeah.
And even guys that would be top on the ladder or at least in contention to be world team or Olympic members. Like Henry Cejudo cut it short.
Yeah.
Johnny Hendricks never really made a run at it. Askren was in for a couple, 3 years there and then out and into the cage.
Jake Rochelt.
Yeah.
Three-timer.
Yeah, absolutely. So fortunately, we've found a way to keep the best, not only the number one guys engaged and in it, but also to the point where we've seen some guys that really probably don't have much of a chance to make a world or Olympic team, but they're competing to make national teams, and some might not even be making national teams right now, but they can continue to do this. And I think that's great to see.
Any chance we could get you at an Olympic trials qualifier just to get in the mix and just say, hey, you tried out for an Olympic team?
None. None whatsoever.
Okay. What weight class would you try to get down to if we could get
I need to get down to... Well, let's start with 79 kilos, first of all.
That's what you'd shoot for.
Then 74 after that. That should be my goal.
Okay. Our guest today, he was a two-time state champion for Highland out of Ohio, graduated in 1999. Then he wrestled for Ohio State University. But he's best known as the president of a company that everyone knows about in our sport called Rudis. It's Jesse Lang. How are you, Jesse?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
We mentioned you graduated from Ohio State. I got to imagine that you're still a Buckeye fan.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I live in central Ohio still. You know, our headquarters is 20 minutes outside the city. So I obviously, you know, have a lot of loyalty to the program, given, you know, that I wrestled there. But it's a great community. You know, the Ohio wrestling community and Ohio State community is one that, you know, is a brotherhood. And I think that's what's great about our sport for a lot of communities. So it was really awesome, you know, this past year to have the NCAA tournament here in Ohio and, you know, see the, you know, I think one of the most exciting finals we've ever had.
One of your business partners at Root is Tommy Rowlands. You guys competed together at Ohio State. Your coach was Russ Hellickson, but then Tom Ryan came on board. How did Tom Ryan include you in the program and make you feel a part of it?
Yeah, at the time when Tom came in, I was actually, you know, I was doing some private lessons with kids, and I didn't have, you know, much involvement in the sport anymore, but he allowed me, you know, to feel at home in the room that, you know, I had been training and competing in, and that was very comforting. You know, I think he quickly embraced, you know, the old Ohio State, you know, alumni and made them feel at home and really the whole state of Ohio. And you can see that he has that magnetic, charismatic personality that, you know, really galvanized the state. So he's done a phenomenal job.
You didn't win a district match your sophomore year. Then you go on to two state championships. Why the improvement after your sophomore year?
I think it's, you know, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, I can give a lot of reasons why, but I think it was finally coming to grips that I was the problem is really what it boils down to. And I think it's common to blame circumstantial things, especially when you're young. And then when you get to the realization that, you know, you need to change your own habits and really become consistent in your process, the results seem to follow. So as a high school wrestler, I think it really does boil down to hard work. You know, if you have a decent level of talent and you got a good head on your shoulders, if you're the hardest worker, there's a good chance you're going to win.
Given your personality, given your stature, it seems like wrestling was really going to be the only outlet for you athletically. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah. I mean, when you're five foot nothing, 100 and nothing, there's not that many options. So I was lucky to find wrestling like a lot of guys. And I'm actually 5'3", 140, but that's a common body size in wrestling and an uncommon body size in the world. So wrestling, for just like a lot of people, it just fit. And it really became the definition of who I was. So a lot of people, I think, that come into the sport beyond their time competing, let the experience define them. And certainly that's what it did for me. And I'm grateful for it.
Jesse, you talk about the jump you made late in your high school career. What was the look yourself in the mirror moment? What precipitated that?
Yeah. I mean, I had beaten the guys in my weight class that, you know, had won the state and had placed very high. And, you know, I had one of those heartbreak moments that I think most wrestlers have. And it was losing to someone you shouldn't on circumstantial things that you could a lot of times blame the ref, but we all have heard it. You know, if it's so close that the ref is making a decision, it's too close. So I just knew I had to make a change. And that summer, I think I spent, you know, 60 plus days at wrestling camps. And before that I hadn't done any. So it was that type of mental shift that this was going to be my life. And this was going to be the way, you know, I was going to, you know, pursue my goals from there on out. And it was just a decision. It was just a decision. I think in a lot of things in life, the hardest part is making that decision, making up your mind. And I made up my mind that I was going to win a state title. And, you know, looking back, it's definitely a proud thing. I don't know that it's something you're very proud of when you're 16 or 17 years old. You know, now it isn't as big of a deal as it was then, but at the time, it consumes your life. You know, for me, I felt like I couldn't breathe. You know, I couldn't take it until I reached that goal. So it was a bit of torture in my soul with being empty, with not reaching my goal. So that drove me. And I was very fortunate to have some great coaches throughout the summer that didn't just treat me like I was just a customer. This sport has an incredible amount of generous people that want to help the youth. And I had people that, one of them is now my partner, is Jeff Jordan. You know, I went to Jeff's camp and he's one of these guys that, you know, really looked out for me and wanted me to succeed. And another one was Ken Cherto. And I ended up working both their camps, you know, at some point or another. And I got to tell you, both those guys went out of their way to help me make it to college.
And then you chose Ohio State. Why did you decide to be a Buckeye?
Yeah, I mean, when you're from Ohio, you know, it's funny because it's comes full circle in the who I'm partnered with now in the business, and Tommy Rollins and Jeff Jordan. But Tommy was the big name recruit. Tommy was the guy coming out of high school that really moved the needle, especially in Ohio. And he was going to Ohio State. Another guy at the time was a guy by the name of Jeff Ratliff, and who I'd actually competed against. And Ohio State was building a really nice recruiting class. And I was looking at a lot of other, you know, smaller schools, but there was that pull and that draw to stay in state and then also compete in the Big Ten. And yeah, the rest is history.
Were you always all in for the sport? Did you have other interests, or was it all about wrestling all the time?
I don't think I was always, you know, I found the sport when I was 10 years old, and it was by chance. I went up to an open mat, and next thing you know, I was in the open tournament that weekend that the high school was holding. And I think the coach just wanted me to come to get another $30 entry fee. And, next thing you know, I'm in this sport somehow overnight in a meaningful way. And since that point, I never looked back. So I just kind of fell into it, and it fit with my personality. And I, you know, in retrospect, man, I wish I would have got started a lot earlier.
Were those good teams to be on with Ohio State? It seems like you guys had good chemistry. I remember being around you a few times out in Colorado, and it seemed like you guys liked each other. See, do you keep in touch with those guys, still teammates to this day?
Well, yeah. I mean, me and Tommy talk daily because of, you know, our relationship in the business. And it is a tight community. So they weren't good teams. They were great teams. I would definitely say, you know, we never won a national title. You know, I was never an All-American. I was never a national champ. I can't say I contributed to the team in a national title race, anything like that. But from a team perspective, the guys were very close. And that was a very valuable experience. So absolutely, they were great teams.
Transitioning that, you got into coaching. You were with Jeff Jordan, who you mentioned earlier. The coaching bug gets into people, and you had that influence. And just reading about you and your influence, it seemed like guys gravitated towards you. David Taylor said positive things about what you did for his career. Do you ever miss that coaching aspect doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, I do miss coaching wrestling in that at that same level of intensity, but I definitely feel like I'm still doing it today in the business. So it's crazy because I never thought when I left Jeff, I had coached for Jeff for 10 years. I did 10 seasons at Graham. I never thought when I left, I would be using the skills and the tools that I had gained as a coach in such a meaningful way here. You know, in fact, I think when I came over and I left Jeff's business, which was a tough thing, and I took on a role as the full-time managing partner of Rudis, I almost probably didn't have enough confidence because I didn't go to business school. I don't have that formal business training, but what I did have was a ton of leadership training, being under the wing of Jeff Jordan and spending so much time, you know, with thousands of kids a year and then at a program like Graham.
So with you saying that you didn't have the business training, do we overestimate what the value of doing that is? It seems like we live in a world where people say you have to do things a certain way and you have to fit a certain protocol. You didn't meet the protocol, yet you're doing very well at your business. What would your suggestion be on how to prepare yourself for what you did?
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a lot of things that, I mean, you asked kind of there was two questions there. Do we put too much value? And then also, how do you prepare yourself? So for me, I think it's individual, you know, and it's very circumstantial because it depends on what you're doing and, you know, what your background is to how you can adapt to the current situation. You know, I was fortunate to be around some great leaders and mentors in my time. And I actually, right out of college, went and sold paper for a year. So it was just like Dunder Mifflin. And it was a great company. And I learned the hard way what sales is, because paper is not, you know, a sexy sell. Paper is a tough sell. So it really comes down to you as the salesman to be the differentiator. And I learned a lot. And at the same time, I was in the Marine Corps. So I was a infantryman, 0311, 0351, Sergeant of Marines. And so I was in the Marine Corps Reserve, and I was doing all this at the same time. So even though I necessarily didn't have, you know, the business school training of, you know, how to analyze a P&L or build a budget and all these different things, I was learning how to improvise, adapt, and overcome. And I think when you have that, which a lot of wrestlers do, you can learn quickly if you want to. And that has really been, you know, what I've been trying to do and continue to try to do, because no matter what training I get, you know, even now, because I have, you know, different tutelage here in the business, it's never enough. You can never be good enough. And that's what wrestling teaches you. Marine Corps kind of teaches you the same thing. So when you have that mindset, I think you can adapt.
Jesse, where and how did the idea for Rudis originate?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. Tommy had dabbled, and he had tried to start a brand called Conquest, and he was also trying to make an Olympic team. And I don't think I he'll tell you he didn't have any concept of what it really meant to run a clothing business or brand, and it failed. But it got an itch started, and he had been talking to me for a long time. And I was working for Jeff at the time, and there was a natural need. We had to service the camp itself. And I had been the guy in charge of sourcing for Jeff's camp, and he has a significant camp business. So it wasn't like you're just making one t-shirt run a year. It's, you know, he has a pretty robust apparel and gear business, you know, for his camp that I was helping to manage. So there was a natural need to do that better, and an interest. And, you know, honestly, it was just a conversation that we had. And the next thing you know, we met at Bob's Big Boy, Frisch's Big Boy. And we kind of drew up a business plan on a napkin. And, you know, I just kind of dove in head first and kind of grabbed the ball with their support, and the rest is history.
Where'd the name Rudis come from?
Yeah, that was Tommy's idea. I mean, Tommy, the name Rudis literally interpreted is a wooden sword. And that wooden sword was a symbol of freedom that the gladiators earned when they went into the field of battle as a slave. And if they won enough battles, they were given that sword, and it was called a Rudis. So for us, it was a really, you know, when you first hear it, when you first heard the name, you're like, what is that? You know, what does that mean? Which was good, because it presented a level of intrigue, which is, you know, good for, from a branding perspective. And we also thought it conveyed, you know, feelings that we had. And I think that a lot of athletes or driven people have, that they're in a way a prisoner to their goals. And when you reach that goal, you know, there's a sense of freedom. And like the gladiators, you get back out there and you do it again sometimes. So we felt like it conveyed, you know, some of the ideals and the ethos of what wrestling holds, but not limited to wrestling itself.
I know it's pronounced Rudis now, but initially I thought it was Rudis. Do you think people get confused by that?
Yeah. I mean, I think some of my own family members don't even know how to say it. They say Brutus because it's Ohio, I'm in Ohio State land, and I'm like, okay. But I think the people in wrestling, you know, the people that really are ingrained in this sport, they know now. So I'm good with it, but it's just like Nike or Nike. Right. And so it can kind of be the same type of deal.
Why did you go after Nancy Schultz to get her on board as to be an equity partner?
The Nancy Schultz relationship has been an absolute blessing, and one that evolved, you know, very naturally. Tommy had wrestled for the Dave Schultz Wrestling Club. Jeff was coached by Dave at Wisconsin. So there was relationships, you know, much like a lot of people in the national wrestling community. I think there's a ton of people that have a degree of separation from Dave Schultz and have felt his impact. And Tommy reached out to Xander and said, hey, we'd love to do a shirt for your dad. And it started as just a shirt. I mean, it was just a shirt. And we made a shirt, and we promoted it then later. And this was the time when Foxcatcher was coming out. So it kind of got a minor viral response. You know, it was the right time and the right place, the right design, whatever you want to say. We had Mark Ruffalo wear the shirt. We did a promotion where we sold 600 plus tickets for a dual meet at Ohio State in conjunction with a movie screening of Foxcatcher where you get a shirt. Xander Schultz flew out. We made an event of it. And I think, honestly, Nancy and Xander saw something in us that maybe we didn't even see in ourselves. And we probably didn't give ourselves enough credit. And they kind of approached us saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool if Dave was, you know, an eternal part of the brand and, you know, potentially Nancy would come on board. So, you know, that's the nutshell version of it. And then next thing you know, Nancy's on board and she's been such a meaningful part of the business, as well as her whole family. And we couldn't be more grateful for what she's done for the business, as well as honored to, you know, convey Dave's legacy through apparel.
Rudis has really taken over the wrestling market in that you see it everywhere. Tournaments, dual meets, you name it, you're going to see Rudis gear. And talking to Tommy Rollins and Nancy Schultz in separate interviews, they said, we knew this was going to happen when we asked them that question. Did you see this coming? Did you see it coming in the same way? Did you see this coming and happening in the way it has, where Rudis has really taken over the wrestling market?
I've always believed that everything is possible. I don't know that I would have said 4 years ago that we'd be where we are as quick as we are. So I've always believed that in the same way as a wrestler, you believe that you're going to win every match when you step on the mat. I've always believed that every day we're going to put forward our best effort. And with that, we can exceed our results, you know, day on day and year on year. So I can't say I'm surprised, because I've seen also the amount of pain and suffering that our team members have endured, put in, and how much they care. But I'm certainly, you know, honored and pleased for you to even say the things you say, because I don't look at it that way. I don't say to ourselves, we're dominating. It's constantly, we're not there yet. And by having that mentality of we're not there yet, I think it keeps us humble and hungry.
What goes in to produce in a shoe?
a lot of, I'll tell you, it was 2 years plus of investment on every level. And in some ways you can break it down, at least for us. Cause I think, you know, there's a couple ways you can approach the project. And I think that that's true of everything in life, right? There's kids that come out for wrestling and they wrestle from November through March and they wrestled. And then there's kids that they're defining their entire being by the experience and they feel like it's life or death. And this for us feels like it's life or death. For me, it's been life or death. And so what goes into making a shoe is there's so many factors. There's so many things you can't boil it down other than you got to get in there, get your hands dirty, put your hands in there. And for me, it's been like anything else. It's been a process of learning, attention to detail, and then never compromising and being in touch with reality in a way that is often uncomfortable. It's all things that you can't point to from a technical perspective, but you can point to from an emotional or personal perspective in the same way you can in wrestling. And guys, everything I keep saying is how wonderful this sport is. And I think there's a lot of people that say that. It just really is the mode of operation for our business. It is the mode of operation. So for me, you know what? Kyle Snyder was wrestling Sagulayev at the World Championships last year, you know, and my match is trying to make the shoe. While he's wrestling his match, me, it's trying to, you know, dial in every single detail and fine point to make the shoe.
How did you sign Kyle Snyder?
Yeah, Kyle's the man. When we had Dave, and we have a lot of other, you know, absolute legends associated with the brand. But at this point, we had never had a living, you know, competing athlete before we had Kyle. And the timing couldn't have been more perfect in the sense that 2 years earlier when he won the Olympics, we weren't ready as a company to support Kyle the way he would need to be supported, not just financially, but operationally to create a brand around him and project his image at the standard that he deserves. And so it was very fortunate and that he, for us, that he went back to Ohio State for 2 years. It just allowed us to mature as a company. And I think it says a lot about him. You know, I mean, you could look at his decision to go compete in college after winning the Olympics. And I think it's made him, you know, not only a better wrestler and a better person, but more of a fan favorite. So, you know, in watching him develop, he was the right guy for us for 1,000 reasons, none being more important than who he is as a person and his love for the sport. And I think we connected on a level that is very genuine. It's a very genuine and down-to-earth real relationship. We're so fortunate that he lives in Columbus. It's absolute, you know, divine intervention. I'm not sure what else to call it. I have to pinch myself sometime, but he's in our office, you know, once or twice a week. And his presence is not, it doesn't boil down to our sales. It's his impact within the culture of our walls that is one of the secrets to our success. That's no different than Dave or Nancy Schultz. I mean, when I think of what Dave Schultz means to our brand, it's not the t-shirts we sell with his name on it. It's not the Sly Fox gear. It's not even going to be the shoe. It's going to be our culture has a responsibility within the walls of Rudis to represent, you know, what Dave stood for. And his spirit is alive here. And our people understanding and knowing that is what causes us to act, you know, how I feel in the right ways. Kyle brings that home even more, right? Or again, because he's here in physically in person. And I feel like when that happens, when that presence comes in office, when you're with someone that is so humble, but also so driven, you can't help but have the people that are exposed to that get better. So he's making us better.
Jesse, I want to go back to the shoe for a minute because I'm really fascinated by this. And I'm sure you and Tommy have owned dozens of wrestling shoes through the years. What kind of things did you like in a wrestling shoe? Components that you wanted to see in this? And how much hands-on process was there with both of you guys through the production of this?
It's been hands on the entire time. You know, it started, there was a year of failure and it caused me to almost, you know, in a metaphorical way, do what you talked about earlier when we were talking about my sophomore year. I had to get down and almost get down to the bare bones and start from scratch and get into reality. And what we had to do, you know, and what we've done, I'm very proud of in that. We've designed from the performance perspective from square one. Performance is number one in the shoe. And I had to learn that. I wasn't an industrial design. I'm not an industrial designer. I didn't go to design school. So I'm learning a lot of different disciplines. But we brought in a guy who has 30 plus years of experience. He's worked with many of the global brands, started his career at one of the big guys, and he wrestled. So him wrestling didn't make him a great designer for this. Him wrestling made him a great translator for our vision. He could use what we're saying and understand it. The metaphors we use, the language we use about, you know, where you should be driving off of and how your ankle should react with the materials and, you know, all these different things that a designer has to understand and that goes into a great product. So the product was built from wrestling language. And I don't know that that's happening enough. I don't think it's happening enough. I can tell you that, you know, I don't want to come across as, you know, arrogant in any way, but I don't believe it's happening enough in our sport. And it's what drove such passion, because this wasn't replication. This was unique creation from at the cellular level. And we were building, you know, from that base of understanding of wrestling, and then such a sound fundamental foundational design perspective, that when you asked how deep I was involved at every single thread and every single level. And I forced myself over the past year, you know, I shouldn't say forced, because it was a joy to really learn this process. So, you know, I don't know that there's another place that you could make this other than overseas, but I had to be, you know, overseas, for basically months of the year, you know, in factory, you know, monitoring this along with our design team, and really, you know, being so zoned in and detail oriented on this process. I'm actually leaving Sunday for another trip.
Do you take that same process when you were talking about the shoes? Do you take that with t-shirts and fighter shorts and everything else you do?
We try, but we need to get better. So honestly, the shoe received more than ever before. The shoe has received so much micro analyzing because for a couple of reasons. One, other than the big global brands that we all know in this space, there's been a lot of people that have tried and failed. And so we can't just come out and be okay. We have to overperform, because we, in a way, have to right the wrongs of the other companies. And people that are in this sport know all the companies and even the products I'm talking about. So we have to overcome their mistakes. So you have to be overly critical. Second, I think shoes are the most meaningful piece of equipment to an athlete. You know, a t-shirt, a singlet, shorts, you may wear them once a week, and footwear you wear every day. And it's really the foundation for all your movement, right? It's the first thing you touch the mat with is your feet. So there has, this product has to perform on so many levels that it requires, you know, a severe amount of scrutiny and attention to detail.
Really like what you said here in an article. You said, we have been successful because of the organic relationships we had with the customer base and the knowledge of the sport. Is that just another way of saying a way of life, which is your slogan?
Yeah, I mean, what it says is, I've always maintained the best part of the sport are this. One, the people, this is what I personally, it's my personal opinion. I'm not speaking for the company. The best part of the sport to me were three things. One, the people I meet. That was number one. Number two, or I should admit, this might be number one. Number two was the time I spent with my father. There was no other time in my life where I was on a journey from an emotional perspective to find myself, and did it in quite the way that I shared it with my father. Now, that can happen, I think, for a lot of people with a coach, their father or their mother or whoever, but it happened with my father. And then three, it's what it teaches you, right? What the sport teaches you. So the first two things I mentioned were relationship based. And we had, you know, Tommy, Jeff, Nancy, and myself, you know, had a lot of relationships that were just organic, right? They were people that you met along your journey in the sport that became like family. And I often think, you know, you go back to any big tournament and it feels like a reunion. It actually feels like a reunion. And that's something that's so unique to our community. And it was something that people really, from in the beginning, we didn't have. Rudis year one, there was no product history. There was no brand knowledge. There was no, you know, anything. They bought because they trusted us as humans, not because they necessarily trusted our corporate policy or our design language or any of those things. So that's where, you know, that those relationships that were forged out of living in the sport are what really were the foundation for the company.
When you get in your busy time and you're on the production line and you're getting stuff cranked out, what does that 6 week, 8 week period look like at Rudis?
It's the deadliest catch. It feels like you're up. I mean, I think there's a lot of businesses that operate that like this. And in Q4, you're double hit. You're hit with wrestling season and you're hit with Christmas season. So it's a very difficult business to staff. I think one of the things that is unique about us in relation to a lot of other businesses is that we're only wrestling. And to staff a business that is so, you know, Q3, Q4 heavy in terms of its sales and operation, and do it at a level that is national and you feel is high, is so hard because there isn't necessarily a huge counterbalance in Q1 and Q2. So Q3 and Q4 is the deadliest catch. It's we go out on that boat, and you know what? We're taking a couple greenhorns with us, but we're going to go as hard as we can all day, all night, because this is really the only time, you know, or that our company can really put some fuel in the furnace to propel us through the next year.
Do you believe in recovery? Do you get recovered? Do you just feel like you got to keep going?
Do I believe in it?
Yeah. Or do you get it?
I wish I did it more. I'm one of the biggest challenges, I think, with anybody is stopping to enjoy where you're at. And, when you're enjoying though, what you're doing, I don't think recovery is viewed in the same way, because you're constantly energized and a bit exuberant and even playful about your time and your day. So while I certainly carry burden and there's certainly stress, I'm also trying to always be in control of perspective. And guys, as a 37-year-old man, a 22-year-old Kyle Snyder has taught me that. I've seen that in his life. So perspective is absolutely critical in the word recovery to me, because I'm recovering when I'm at work and I see, you know, our team operating on all cylinders. That's a positive thing that gives me energy, and energy to me is recovery.
Where do you come up with your t-shirt designs?
I mean, we have a great design team. I mean, I'm so proud of our team. This is a team, and not everyone's a wrestler, but they have an affinity for the sport and an appreciation for the sport and an immense amount of empathy. I always say empathy is the cornerstone for great design, because when you can put yourself in someone else's shoes and understand what they're feeling, and then potentially try to create that feeling in a design or a product, you know, that's really, you're really strong at design and empathy. So we have a design team that just loves the sport and is great at soaking things up. So I'm very proud of the people of this company. And I don't think we've seen our best work by any means. It also comes from a genuine desire to speak about the sport. It's not, we don't create designs. We try not to create designs. You know, I don't want to be overly braggadocious. We try not to create designs that are merely commercial. Our goal is to be the most authentic expression of what wrestling is. So that means that shirt has to say something to the wrestler, both in the feel, the fit, you know, or whatever the concept is from the actual graphic design. So you'll see a ton of stuff that, you know what, is just super specific to wrestling. You know, we got some shirts coming out here in a couple of weeks that are Kerry Colott, Fargo champ. Right. I mean, that's super specific niche market, you know, to a customer that has a specific palate and wants to consume wrestling in the most fanatical of ways. So by having our eyes in that perspective and wanting to speak to the community, it really drives design. We say that we want to speak to the top 1%, because if we speak to the top 1%, then we speak to everybody.
All right. I just actually have a few t-shirt designs I want to throw by you here. You're talking about the top 1%. I want to see what you think about these three. Number one is, it's a lang way to the top.
It's a what? It's
a lang. Instead of long way, it's a lang way, and we'll spell it with your name.
I can't do that. I never, honestly, I'm a little, I don't even like necessarily identify myself with the company in an outward way. So I'll have to pass on that one.
Okay. Now let's try to maybe market to the female audience and just have a shirt that says Jesse's Girl.
That's the number one song that when I go to a wedding, people request, and then I awkwardly have to sit down because they pull me out on the dance floor. So I don't know that I need any more of it.
Okay. And my last one is just, hey, you have Kyle Snyder signed. Let's just do an acronym. Let's have Kyle on the front, and it just says, keep your life exemplary.
That one's closer. That
okay.
one's a lot closer.
I'm getting a little closer. Okay.
You're getting a lot closer. It's hard to put anything with Kyle on a shirt and not have it be cool.
Yep. Okay. Now, hey, my final question, which is going to lead into possibly some more, but my final question is the ultimate question here, and it's going to take a little while to elaborate because I have some backstory to explain on this. But 2002 National Duels in Columbus, you're in the semifinals against the University of Oklahoma. You're going into heavyweight. Tommy Rollins, your business partner, is down. The team is down by 4 points. Tommy Rollins either needs to get a tech fall against Leonce Crump, who's a stud, by the way. He's 6'5", 260 at the time, or a fall. So he needs to get a tech fall or fall. Really, a tech fall is not going to happen, so he needs a fall. It goes into overtime. It's 8-8, I think. And then he gets the takedown, continuation rule. Chuck Yeager, the official, he gets the fall, and you guys absolutely go berserk. Russ Hellickson blows out his ACL. What I want to know is, where were you in the pig pile when all that transpired?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a great story, and you recollected it almost better than anybody I would know. So you did it perfectly, and Crump was a beast. When you went into that match, I think everyone was like, okay, I mean, Tommy's good, but you can need a pin or a tech, and it's just not going to happen. I was cutting to 125 at the time, which was an uncomfortable cut. And if you will go back to the video, I should be a lot more happy than I am, because I was basically cutting weight, I think, at the time. And Tommy won. And for me, I was just so relieved, because instead of wrestling at 9 a.m., we got to wrestle in the afternoon. So my weigh-in, my duration after weigh-ins was a lot different. So I had a very selfish point of view at that moment in time.
And if I think you guys were the first team to beat Oklahoma State and Oklahoma all in one day.
Yeah. I mean, Russ had mentioned that, and especially at that time, I'm not saying their teams aren't, you know, phenomenal right now. Those were some of the best teams that those schools had, but they were having some amazing teams. They're making national title runs, both of them. So it was pretty miraculous. You know, I think as a whole, Ohio State wasn't at that level at that time. So it did feel like a magical moment, and it happened in St. John Arena. And I know it was special for the guys on that team.
Do you ever relive that? Do you ever watch it, pop it in, get motivated?
No, I mean, guys, frankly, you know, my competitive career, it is not something I'm really proud of. I mean, I went into college with very big goals and big aspirations, and, you know, I failed to become an All-American, and you know, I honestly wanted more than even that. And I think a lot of wrestlers feel that way. So there's still this a bit of emotional, you know, pain, or a bit of even a little bit of a hole when I think about my competitive career, and a bit unsatisfied. And, you know, it's funny because I travel around a lot for the business now, and I've interviewed just some of the best in the sport. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the legends of our sport. You see them on our website or on our YouTube page, and we have interviews with just legends. And it's funny because I think at some level, if you don't win an Olympic gold medal, I'm finding that there's a level of pain that exists in most wrestlers that really love it. And so I'm finding my point of view on my college career is not different in a lot of ways from guys that, you know, maybe didn't win a state, or guys that, you know what, didn't win an Olympic medal that went. So I still have a little bit of sadness, and I would say it still drives me. It's something I learned from. I'm certainly grateful for the experience. Would have liked to have more. Grateful, you know, honestly, to have even competed in the Big Ten and for Ohio State and on that platform, because the experience was fundamental and foundational, you know, to me as a human being. And I was grateful to be around such, you know, great teammates, peers, and then coaches.
All right, we'll end with this. We've already seen who played Nancy Schultz in a movie. Who would play Jesse Lang and Tommy Rollins when they make the movie about Rudis?
Wow. Tommy Rollins would be played by Peyton Manning. I think he looks like...
I love it.
Yeah, so who would play me? Man, I can't even say that, because you know what? I either got to do some, you know, humor that makes me look really stupid, or if I say something that's pretty cool, it's like, man, this guy's pretty egotistical. If you were to say anybody, he's not my age now, but I think any resemblance, I'm thinking of a small guy, energetic, it'd be like a Michael J. Fox or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think that could work. I mean, Tom Cruise has the wrestling background, but I don't know if the age necessarily matches up. So probably
pass on
that. I can
tell you who I want it to be. Yeah, who I want it to be and who it really would be are two different things. You know, it's funny because we have this, I when I'm interviewing people, I always say, who is your inward self? Who is your outward self? Or I'll say, what is your outward color? What is your inward color? To get a temperature on, you know, how they view themselves on their outward perspective, and then what is their inside voice? So I'd love it to be someone really cool, like Tom Hardy, or someone edgy like that. But it's probably someone a little bit more dorky, like Michael J. Fox.
so no Ashton Kutcher for Tommy. The height's there. He's got the reputation.
Peyton Manning, man. Listen, he can fill in for a stunt double on a Papa John's pizza commercial tomorrow.
I love it. Hey, it's a way of life. Thanks for joining us on this edition of On the Mat. We really appreciate it this time. For Jesse Lang and Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com, you've been listening to On the Mat.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.